When I was studying for my PhD, which was in my previous life, doing literature, I did the 19th century, and I try to eat like I'm in the 19th century. So if you've squirted something out from a factory machine, it's probably not something I'm excited to eat. I like things that are coming out of the ground, that you can get from your farmer neighbor, and that are in your region, that are seasonal. I'm not trying to have strawberries right now because it's not strawberry season.
You can get them though.
This is KCBX Central Coast Public Radio. I'm Father Ian Dellinger, and I'm playing with food. The Central Coast is ripe with fresh produce, there is no doubt. Yet the vast majority of produce is purchased in the supermarket. Some of our own produce is picked from the fields, shipped hundreds of miles away to a warehouse, only to be shipped back to the Central Coast for sale. But not everyone buys into the corporate consumption way of stocking the kitchen. Every weekday morning, I rise to the dulcet tones of Morning Edition host Rachel Juchek. One might think that someone raised in Ohio would be grabbing most of her fresh produce from the pantry shelves, opening them up with the swift movement of the wall-mounted electric can opener, with a naughty splash of the canned juices as the only seasoning. However, her childhood proved to her that there can be too much of a good thing.
I think I might have also have to give credit to Julia Child for helping me become interested in food, because my mother was just, you know, Teflon-coated skillet, poached chicken breasts with a chaste sprinkling of lemon pepper. That's it. I'm making up for the lack of garlic now in the second part of my life.
Living in Los Osos has transformed the culinary endeavors of this English teacher come radio host, and it starts in her garden. Homegrown, carefully attended, and seasonally selected shape Rachel's passion for plants. We're on a journey through her fog-kissed garden to her journey from the Midwest to California to her journey from English professor to radio host. And because she dabbled in 19th century literature, I threw in a little 19th century food-related music, the fourth movement of Schubert's Trout Quintet. No doubt, hormone-free, wild, line-caught trout. Sadly, not part of Rachel's garden, but she likes fella cootie, so that'll be in the mix.
Yeah, if I'm going to go through the trouble of making something at my own house, I want to make sure I'm using great ingredients. So we do try to get as many organic products as we can. And the best way to have inexpensive organic or almost free is to grow it yourself. Okay. So we have a lot of things happening in our yard that are a mixture of taking a cooking class on how to make dumplings and then have some of the ingredients that you would use in future when you make dumplings just out there in the yard.
And it's surprisingly, it is a clear day in Los Osos.
It's beautiful in the wintertime here. We pay for it in the summer.
Exactly.
Let's take a look outside. We're so close to the ocean. You can hear the ocean from the driveway as the surf changes. You want to pull that door? So not everything is a success. We see a dead tomato there, but artichokes coming on. And I have an herb spiral that we have out here. Sorry, the snails got to our sage. So it's not the prettiest. But we have some sage and tarragon here, where there's some marjoram. So you can just come out and trim it. And I would probably not buy that from the store, but I know that I didn't spray any pesticides on it.
Is that dill or carrot tops?
It's wild anise. And we leave that here because some of the butterflies like to eat it.
Oh, okay.
So we just let this wild anise that we don't actually eat. It's like a wild fennel. We could do something with the fronds, but we'd kind of just leave it for the butterflies.
And this fennel here, do you use the seeds? I see it's all dried up and the leaves are gone.
I just am lazy. I'm a lazy gardener, so I haven't cut it back yet. We get a lot of soil from a friend of ours who used to have a microgreens company. Mm-hmm. And so we have a lot of free microgreens that come up into salads and greens and red Russian kale and Swiss chard,
is that
cilantro.
Called, that's called voluntary, right?
In this case, we got some kind of pre-seeded soil.
Oh, okay.
And so we get some volunteers, which is always super fun. So I'm just kind of lazy in that way. This is from last year, and you just let your greens keep going and they'll start to branch out and then have some more life.
Okay.
So by having a pesticide-free yard and and learning from some friends and neighbors in the California Rare Fruit Growers Society. We get some plants from some friends there, and we have had a chance to go to their Festival of Fruit. So it makes for a really interesting way of doing edible gardening, where you're getting citrus trees and interesting tomatoes. And it's really fun having a space where you can garden, even on a windowsill, with doing some greens, some herbs, especially where we live here in the Central Coast. It doesn't freeze, so you can grow year-round.
I'm not good at it. I have two brown thumbs. I've killed, in the time, that 2.5 years I've lived here, I've killed 3 things of rosemary.
That's kind of hard to kill. Do you water it too much? Do you love it to death?
Well, I've done the whole water too much, not water enough, blah, blah, blah. But anyway, you've got a lot of clover.
I always try to have something flowering in the yard for the bees, because our honeybees and other pollinators need to have flowers to eat. They need to have enough water. And I think the drought was really hard on them. And so if we keep too tidy of a yard, then there won't always be flowers for them. So I know that they like those. And so I don't let the clover go crazy everywhere it wants to go, because it would be everywhere. I try to do some targeted weeding to make sure that there's still some flowers there for the bees. Because we have butterflies and bees. We have so many ladybugs. We don't use any sprays on our yard. It took us some years to get into that balance with the biodynamic yard, but we are totally there, and you don't have to spray anything, and you have really strong plants, and it kind of helps you to prevent problems before you have them.
Rachel's garden is more than just herbs. Because of the time of year we met up, and because Rachel lives in foggy Los Osos, I was surprised to see a tomato plant.
You pretty much have the only tomato plants left on the Central Coast. Are these winter tomatoes?
These are zombie tomatoes from last year. So this is going to be like a larger yellow one. Out here, we don't get hot enough, like in Paso Robles, for growing like those big beefsteak tomatoes. Mm. This is the most sunny spot of my yard. So it gets full sun all day.
Full fog.
We haven't had as much fog as we used to, I have to be honest with you. So it's getting the most sun, and this is my experiment this year. My husband expanded our front yard. The fence used to go to the edge of the greenhouse there.
Okay.
And so now this is where all the free sun is.
Okay.
And so I've been trying to put as much edible stuff. When they had the Festival of Fruit here in San Luis Obispo 2 years ago, the speaker was Rosalind Creasy. And she is an advocate for edible gardening, and she lives up in Silicon Valley, so she has to be sneaky about it so people don't complain. And she's like, it's always better to say I'm sorry than to ask for permission. So it's really fun to have the tomatoes doing so well out here, and I just added like a second story because I think these are indeterminate tomato plants, and they're just going to keep going. That's a fantastic plant. And I've got these well-established zombie tomatoes for next year, so we'll be having tomatoes way before June.
Oh, that's great. Okay.
So, but yeah, there's all kinds of fun things going on in the yard. You got to protect your yard from the gophers. We have some strawberry plants, and
you need to get a cat.
We do have my neighbor's cat does a very good job with keeping the gophers under control. This is our little greenhouse. That's where I have my coffee at 3:30 in the morning, getting ready to go to work, looking at Twitter. Let's go to the back here.
Okay. Some chilies there that are bright red.
Yes. My husband likes to make a salsa. This is another tree I'd like to show you for our lemon lime pound cake. We grow the limes ourselves. So this is a bear's lime. They turn yellow when they are ready. So we've already picked a couple for making this lemon lime pound cake. And we have a lemon tree back there. Looks a little sad. I might be overwatering that one. So I am no 100% expert when it comes to gardening, but you just keep trying more and more things. And, you know, this is 2 tomato plants, and they're still covered in fruit.
Yeah.
And you don't have to just cook green tomatoes. They finish ripening up.
As we journeyed from her front yard to her backyard to her kitchen, where she was preparing a celebration meal for friends, Rachel's own journey around the globe came up.
Where did you grow up, and where did your mom not teach you how to cook?
In Dayton, Ohio.
Dayton, Ohio.
Yes.
Because sometimes when I'm listening to you, I wake up to you in the morning. I've noticed a couple words. There's kind of this Great Lakes kind of tinge to it. And I don't know. I know Dayton's in Ohio, but I don't know where. Does that whole kind of Scandinavian, Minnesota, Wisconsin, Michigan kind of accent stretch that far east?
Not really. I also spent several summers working as an outward bound instructor up in the Boundary Waters in northern Minnesota. So I think that's where I might have picked up a little bit of the Minnesota thing. So I hope it's confusing for people. Where is this lady coming from? So
you hope it's confusing.
I do.
It's the same for me because
I spent my junior year in college at the University of Edinburgh in Scotland. So I think that's another thing, too. I have a literature background, and I'd like to think that's how it helps me pronounce a lot of things correctly, although I know I'm not 100%. But yeah, it's a mixture of southern Ohio down near Cincinnati area. It's in southwestern Ohio is where Dayton is. We went up to the Shakespeare Festival in Stratford, Ontario a lot. That plus going to spend some time living in Scotland.
Rachel's personal travels may have influenced her accent, but they also influenced her perspective on food, which is what our conversation was all about. As I sat and watched her move back and forth from chopping kabocha and stirring the pot on the stove, she shared how locally grown takes many different shapes.
I did a media trip to Tennessee a few years ago, and we went to a moonshine place. And it was so interesting to learn about how, from an economic perspective, the production of the grains that are from one farmer and produced, you know, and then that raw material goes to the moonshiner and does this, and then it goes to over to the animals and whatnot. It was so interesting to learn about how spirits, when they're done right in a community, are like of the community, by the community, and for it. And that's why when you have like a system, like a big semi truck comes and drops off all your factory produced liquor or whatnot, it's a totally different sort of environment in your community. So that's another great thing about the Central Coast is I think there's a lot of interreliance here, and it's from farmers and producers and foodies. As long as we can keep looking around for what we have right here in our midst, because we, as opposed to thinking about how we have to import everything from New York or, you know what I mean?
Yeah.
Shifting gears, there's Rachel's career journey, from English major and teaching writing and literature at Cal Poly, to a desire to live in a beautiful location, to producing a food blog, as she chops the various vegetables from her garden and other sustainable sources.
Yes, I totally changed my career path after 2008. While my food blog did not result in me making bundles of money, it exposed me to exploring the Central Coast. So it feels like a natural fit to be broadcasting to the Central Coast and reading the local news. Yeah, it's been a bit of a stretch, but I feel like I've finally landed in just the perfect job for me because it's intellectually stimulating. I get to work on my own and challenge myself every day to try to not make mistakes. And I feel connected to the community, and I feel like I'm sharing important information.
Well, you say it's a perfect job. You get up at 3 a.m. Is that really the part of a perfect job?
I'm done with work at 9 a.m., so I have kind of the rest of the day to do. I have one other hour obligation during the day, and so that means I get to garden or take a nap or read a book or do some writing. I don't have the world's greatest social life during the week, but on the weekends I do try to celebrate with friends and stay up later and act like a normal person and then go back into the early going to sleep pattern so during the week. But it's a really fun job. I enjoy being on the radio. I like it feels like an important role.
The joke is I have a face for radio. Do people recognize you either by your voice or by your face?
Not usually, no. Which is kind of nice to have that incognito thing. I like not having to get all fancy for going to work because it's just me and the microphone. Sometimes I wake up and my hair looks like Flock of Seagulls because I went to bed on wet hair. But I do have some fans and some people who I know already who are excited to see me because they feel like they spend time with me every day because they listen to me on the radio. I try to sound alert and friendly and informed, kind of keep things moving because that's what I think the morning requires. I really enjoy being in radio. It's been fun to change my career. I love having access to so much food. Here's a funny story. When I first moved here, I was living in San Luis Obispo. I went down to the farmer's market, and where I'm from, the strawberry season is 3 weeks long. It's in June, and if you miss it, you miss it. Mm-hmm. So I saw all these strawberries for sale at the farmer's market, so I bought a whole box, and I processed them, and I put them in the freezer, and then I went to the farmer's market the next week, and they still had them. I went the next month, they still had strawberries. And I said, how long is your strawberry season? And they're like, you know, many months. So it's just that adjustment between the Midwestern way of living where we have full-on winter with snow and being out here where you have wonderful food products all year round because it doesn't freeze here close to the coast. I have totally become a Californian. I love it out here.
Rachel's desire to live in the most beautiful place in the United States, the Central Coast of California, and her love for food led her to hosting NPR's Morning Edition on KCBX. On the surface, none of her history seems related. But like the zombie tomatoes, the snail chump sage, and the yellow bear's limes in her garden, her passion and her careers are all intertwined. What she can't get from her garden, she endeavors to source locally, just like the news.
The reason I like going to stores like that is that the owners have kind of vetted the food that's there. So I know that
And it's local. There's a lot of local stuff.
Mm-hmm. And so I don't have to read my labels as much, like, can I trust what's really going on in this?
I have found that their local organic produce is no much more expensive than sanitized produce in the supermarket. Mm-hmm. I go there and I'm like, it's the same price per pound. I think I'm going to buy it. But their variety isn't as much.
Yep.
Because they're not getting stuff that's not grown in season.
These natural food stores are dotted around the Central Coast. They can supplement your home garden, as can the local farmers markets. With the availability of produce from these three sources, you can be assured of the local, organic, in-season produce that make living on the Central Coast, cooking on the Central Coast, eating on the Central Coast so exciting and unparalleled. I visited Rachel to learn more about subsistence gardening and to share her story with the KCBX family. What is just as important, though, is that your Morning Edition host isn't just passionate about local organic produce and nourishing the body with fruits and vegetables that are of high quality and lovingly hand-curated. Rachel has a passion for diversity, and not just diversity of diet, but diversity of cultures.
You live way out here in Los Osos, and I live in the metropolis of San Luis Obispo. So one of the problems I had of moving here, I'm really excited to live in San Luis Obispo, but the one thing that we're missing is a variety of quality ethnic food. Mm-hmm. And my favorite place to escape when I lived in the hinterlands of northwest of England was to go to London, where they have...
so much food.
London itself has the most nationalities of any city in the world.
Really?
Yeah. So you could get any type of food you wanted. And I've mostly focused on the subcontinent and Persian food and then fish and chips. But here we kind of have to either drive 4 hours north, 4 hours south, or kind of figure out how to make it ourselves.
I agree that I wish we had more options.
Mm-hmm.
We do have a lot of beautiful nature, and we have increasing numbers of great restaurants around here, but not as many as I would like.
Right.
And not with the diversity. So something that I've been doing in the past couple of years is exploring other cuisines and how to cook them at home. So I took a class, and I came home from a four-hour class, and I know how to make pho in a pressure cooker. So I can make pho in 2 hours. Then you learn that, oh, I have all this extra chicken for, like, the next dish I'm going to make. You know, I learned how to make rice paper rolls and things I've always wanted to know how to do that seems like a mystery to me from my Midwestern background. I took another class on how to make dumplings. It was a dim sum party class.
Ooh, that sounds fun.
So I learned 3 different dumplings, a couple of side dishes, and I think we're going to do a dumpling kind of fest because it's really fun to put them together, and it's just... it's demystifying. I don't speak Vietnamese. I don't speak a whole lot of Spanish, but I find that being able to dip into these recipes and different cuisines, I find myself going into the different markets. I've been into every Asian market in San Luis Obispo County that I can find. You still have to go up to the Bay Area to get a lot of things.
Just a hint, in Santa Barbara, there is an Indian market, tiny, tiny, like smaller than... it's probably the size of this house, half this house, like your kitchen and your living room. And things are stacked floor to ceiling. He says, what would you like? What are you looking for? And you tell him, and it produces it. And it's not like $4,000. Mm-hmm. I was really, really impressed. And I was really excited that if I really need something for Indian cooking, because I taught myself how to cook Indian food while I was in Britain.
Cool.
Best place to learn other than India.
Uh-huh.
I only have to drive an hour and a half rather than 3.5.
Like, I've been into some of these stores up in Oakland, and I'm not even sure what I'm looking at when I go into some of these more advanced, what I would consider for myself, advanced markets.
Oakland's Chinatown is less intimidating, and my sister lives in Oakland, so I kind of, if I need 20-pound bag of sticky rice, I can get it in Oakland. But San Francisco's Chinatown, America's original Chinatown is a bit intimidating. So we could do that as a show.
That would be super fun.
Yeah.
It's hard to get away from this area in the Central Coast because we're kind of a little bit remote, but you can get there through cooking and through exploring different markets and meeting new people and learning how to do the recipe and taking a class, inviting somebody to come over and share a meal with you. And some communities actually do it as part of a structured thing where they will focus on a particular cuisine and everybody brings something from that and then they learn more about that country. So I am all about food and openness and delicious friendship.
Food, openness, delicious friendship. Drinking coffee in her greenhouse at 3:30 in the morning as she mentally prepares to be the voice that the Central Coast wakes up to gives Rachel an openness unlike any of us will ever experience. Her love for food, distinct from gluttony, is also a love for the earth and the care of the land. It's a love for peoples of far-flung lands and friends nearby. Those are simple organic ingredients out of which delicious friendships are made. Yet another fine illustration of the value of playing with food. I'm Father Ian. This is KCPX, Central Coast Public Radio.